Get this and get it straight. Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. The grave. There's no other end. The grave. There's no other end.
Hi, and welcome back to the Radio Detective Story Hour for Monday, October the 23rd, 2006. Last week I began a look at the history of the radio detective serial, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. As I hope to point out, the series, which was on the air for 13 years, changed over time due in part to the changes in lead actors as well as the scriptwriters. I began with a never-aired audition starring Dick Powell, which, as I pointed out last week, was played in the same way that most of Dick Powell's radio detectives were presented. This week I want to look at the premiere of the actual series, which was broadcast on February the 11th, 1949. There was actually a second audition 1 month after the Dick Powell audition. This second one starred Charles Russell, who would become the first series Johnny Dollar. Instead of playing that audition, and since Charles Russell was the first Dollar, I wanted to focus on the series itself, since this is ultimately how listeners first heard the detective. Charles Russell had appeared in a number of movies beginning in 1943, none in starring roles. He was under contract with 20th Century Fox, and the radio work was probably additional income for this young actor. Just prior to signing on to the radio series, he had starred in a number of rather forgettable films, all released in 1948. Initially, like the Dick Powell version, Johnny Dollar was portrayed as a wisecracking, womanizing detective who got his cases via the insurance industry. Unlike the Powell audition, the expense account became more prominent as the means to carry the story. Each time the scene would shift, Dollar would explain the cost on the expense report, narrating as the change in location took place. As written by Gil Dowd and Paul Dudley, some of the same elements of character from the Powell audition were preserved. Dollar spent more time involved in action dialogue, though there was always the required scene with a beautiful woman, as temptation tickled at the detective's desire. The clichés were often fast and furious in these moments. Such lines were ubiquitous throughout the scene, like, "Her hair stopped you cold and then her eyes gave you the go signal," and "You certainly trash a room." I think that what I didn't like about Russell's portrayal in the role is that there was a constant Edward G. Robinson sort of snarl to many of his delivered lines. I just couldn't quite picture him as either a tough guy or a romantic type. Overall, these stories, written during writers Dowd and Dudley's run, were very well done, though standard radio detective fare for 1949 into 1950. By early 1950, with only two more episodes to go before Russell would end his run as Johnny Dollar, two things occurred. The opening of the show, while still using the musical theme heard throughout this run, began with a phone ringing, Dollar answering the phone, and a person from one of the insurance companies hiring Johnny for a job. This was an opening that would later appear throughout the mid-50 versions. The second occurrence was the storylines, now written solely by Gil Dowd, seemed more serious with less sarcasm. Here's a short clip from one of those final shows with Russell. Hopefully in the clip you can get some sense of how Russell played the character, and then compare it with the complete show that I'll be presenting this week.
Johnny Dollar.
Jeff Connors, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Jeff. I haven't heard from you.
What are the chances of you making it down here to Dallas real fast-like, huh?
Well, I never knew you to be in a hurry, Jeff.
It's a firebug, Johnny. Four fires in 4 weeks. Total claims to date, 95,000. This keeps up, I ain't got no job left. You just gotta get out of here tonight.
You're kind of rushing things, aren't you?
Well, it ain't me, Johnny. Oh, it's the firebug. Thought you'd like to be here when number 5 goes up. That means you gotta be in on the 10 o'clock flight.
Don't tell me it works on schedule.
Every Tuesday night at 11 o'clock. Whoosh. What do you say, pal?
I'll be there.
Despite the seriousness of these final shows, the titles on the scripts were rather tongue-in-cheek. The episode from which the clip came is known as the Firebug Hunter Matter, but the script title was Press My Asbestos Dinner Jacket, Mother, I'm Going to the Smoke Eater's Ball. You can see the humor despite the serious episode. Next week, things change as a new producer and a new lead actor come in. More script writers were added and the series begins to take on a new tone. So here now is Charles Russell in the premiere episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Perikoff Policy Matter.
The Columbia Broadcasting System presents Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. The next half hour has its baggage packed to take a half-hour trip with America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At insurance investigation, he is just an expert. At making out his expense account, he is an absolute genius.
Expense account submitted by investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, East Coast Underwriters, Terminal Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of my expenditures in the investigation of the Perikoff policy for your company. Expense account, item one, plane fare to Benton, Ohio, $40.04. Expense account, item two, plane fare Benton back to Hartford, $40.04. Explanation, purchase two one-way tickets instead of saving money by purchasing one round trip. Because of a type of case I'm usually assigned, I never press my luck by buying round trips. This time, I was almost right. Expense account, item three. Cab fare, airport to Valley Hotel, $2.20. Tip the driver.
Gee, a dollar.
Well, naturally.
There'll be steak on the table tonight. Welcome to Warfare City.
Hey, Dorman.
Hey, yes, sir. What can I do for you, sir?
Bring my bag inside, will you? Over here.
A dollar?
Always.
Right here, boy.
Good evening, sir.
Hello. Do you have a reservation for Johnny Dollar?
Yes. Mr. Dollar's in his room. He checked in about 8 o'clock.
What? I guess I ain't the man I used to be. What room is he in?
Oh, sorry, sir. I'm not permitted to tell you that. I can call.
Oh, no, never mind. Let me have an envelope, will you? I'd like to leave my card for this Mr. Dollar.
Yes, sir. Here you are.
Thanks. Here, just pop this in his box. The clerk popped the envelope into box number 207, so I popped myself into an elevator going up to room 207. I'd come to Benton to investigate a murder, and in just a matter of minutes, I found myself ready to commit one.
Hey, yes? Who is it?
A bellboy, sir. A package from Hartford.
Just a minute. What kind of a
package? Special delivery!
Come on, get up on your feet.
Oh, it's safer down here. Now, take it easy. You must be Johnny Dollar.
Sometimes strangers in a hotel room can be a lot of fun, but not when they're men and not when they're using my name. What's your angle?
Now, listen, Dollar, I can explain everything.
It better be good and it better be fast.
I didn't want to be seen waiting for you in the lobby, and it's important that I talk with you before anybody else does. That's why I'm here. I'm Eric Barker.
Oh, the defense attorney in this Perikoff thing, huh? Well, I hope you're better at defending your client than you are at defending yourself.
Well, whether my client goes to the chair or not, unfortunately, has nothing to do with my being a good lawyer. That's why I wanted to talk to you.
Well, I suppose this is one time when the attorney won't mind relinquishing the floor. Why don't you get up on your feet?
Oh, thanks. Thanks, I will. I'm no coward, Dollar, but if either one of us is going to get any place on this case, we'll have to work together. I need your help, and I need it badly.
Sorry, I do a single act.
Oh, now, don't be hasty. I can help you, too. Just how much do you know about the Perikoff murder?
Well, I know it's one of the screwiest cases I've ever run into. Beneficiaries are knocking off insured people all over the country, but not here in Benton. Oh, no. Here, they tell me, the insured man knocked off the beneficiary. And now I've got the jolly assignment of trying to keep the state from executing the insured man. My employer, East Coast Underwriters, isn't anxious to see $100,000 of their money burn up in the electric chair.
Well, at least we're both stuck with the same tough job.
Look, I'll tell you a few things that I already know, and you fill it in from there.
All right.
All I want to know is that Perikoff was shot to death, and that his business partner, your client, Harlan Wolf,
was picked up making a quick trip out of town as being held for the murder. What have they got on him?
Only what they found on him, and it's enough. The murder weapon.
Any witnesses?
One. Parakoff's widow, Marcia. An eyewitness.
A murder weapon and an eyewitness. It seems, at least at first glance anyway, that the state of Ohio will be receiving a large electric bill one day soon. Any chance of my seeing Wolf?
No, not before he's indicted.
Oh, great.
Dollar, Harlan Wolf shot Parakoff in self-defense. There was no premeditation. I'm convinced that I could get him off with a second-degree manslaughter verdict. That is, I could if it weren't for the tactics of the prosecution.
Oh, what's that?
Well, they not only have intimidated my character witnesses, but they also have suborned their own to perjury. That's the sort of thing I'm up against.
Well, as the insurance companies keep saying, never say die. Where can I find the widow Parakoff?
They aren't holding her in protective custody so nobody can question her. She may be at home. That's 1375 96th Street.
That's a lot of figures. By the way, how's hers? Expense account item 4. Cab fare to home of murdered man and the girl he left behind him. $2.40. I shivered all the way out to the suburbs, but not from fear or anticipation. Just a simple case of summer shorts in red flannel weather. The Parakoff place was obviously the product of a good income and a bad architect. It looked like a great big wedding cake, and Mother Nature had mercifully iced the confection. The front walk was white and unframmeled as the driven snow. As a matter of fact, that's what it was. 3 inches of it, which meant that Marcia hadn't had a visitor in the past couple of hours. I was playing detective, and somebody inside was playing the radio. So I played Peeping Tom and loved every second of it. I couldn't see her face, but she had a lovely profile. I hastened to the door. Ouch! Her hair was red and her eyes were green. Her hair stopped you cold and then her eyes gave you the go signal.
Yes?
Would you mind saving that yes for later?
I beg your pardon?
I've come to ask your help and I hope you'll say yes. You see, my name is Johnny Dollar and I've been sent to Benton to investigate the death of your husband.
Say, what is this? Has it turned into a federal case?
Oh, I'm from the insurance company.
Oh, come in.
Where can I put my coat? This snow is melting all over your carpet.
Let it melt. Just throw your coat any place.
Okay.
Good shot. Come on in by the fireplace. Nice and warm.
Oh, I should have brought some chestnuts. I could have followed her with my eyes closed. She headed for the living room, leaving a pathway of perfumed air behind her, and I didn't waste a breath of it. That's nice perfume.
Sit down.
Thanks. If you can stand a compliment before we get down to business, you certainly do furnish a room.
Oh, you like it? Most of the things are just reproductions.
Not the things I'm talking about.
Oh, you mean me.
Uh-huh. It's a happy surprise. I expected to find someone fatter and fortier.
My husband was. Now, what about his insurance?
Oh, you've got me wrong. I'm working for the company that insured the man being held for the murder of your husband, Harlan Wolf.
What do you want from me?
Just the story of what happened.
Oh, well, that I can't do. The district attorney had a long talk with me about it. I'm not supposed to say anything to anybody about it until the trial.
Well, I'm not asking you for any state secrets. I just want you to save me a trip down to the morgue.
Oh, don't be so brutal.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were still in mourning. That negligee confused me. Anyway, I'm at the newspaper morgue. That's what they call their files. You gave them a story. Why won't you give it to me?
I told you I can't.
Okay, sorry I wasted your time.
Oh, wait a minute. You aren't leaving.
Well, you aren't cooperating.
Oh, sit down. I'm going crazy in this house alone all the time. Can't we find something else to talk about?
Sure, later. But first things first.
Well, all right. Well, I don't see how it could be wrong to tell you what's already been in the newspapers.
Oh, go on.
Well, all right. Harlan Wolf and I were here, in this room, alone. We were discussing business.
Business?
Business. The Highland Coal Corporation. My husband was its president. Harlan is the secretary treasurer, and I'm the vice president.
I can't resist this, but
You know, your kind of businesswoman makes this anthracite heart of mine feel very bituminous.
What? Well, I don't get it.
Let it go. So you and Wolf are sitting here talking about your coal business.
Yes. And then my husband came home.
And no doubt accused you and the secretary-treasurer of putting in too much overtime, is that it?
Oh, yes. Oh, it was terrible. They fought, and finally Harlan ran over to the couch over there and pulled his gun out of his overcoat pocket and started pulling a trigger.
Who called the police? The neighbors?
No, I did. Well, that's all there is to it.
Well, that's all I wanted to know. It didn't hurt, did it?
No. Now, how about using those big shoulders of yours to throw a log on the fire?
Well, sure. I'll go outside and get one.
Oh, there are logs in here.
Uh-uh. I'd rather have one that's a little damp. They burn slower.
Oh. Well, then while you're at it, get a big one.
I left Marcia gazing into the fire, called a cab, and stepped out into the cold night air to wait for it. I went down the front walk with my mind on what lay behind me instead of what was ahead.
Hey, Dollar.
Out of the white snow loomed two very large blue police uniforms, completely filled.
Get out of this Parakoff mess, Dollar. Matter of fact, get out of this town.
Why, officer? I'm just beginning to like it here.
This is from the top that makes it official. We got the guilty man. We don't want any trouble.
Well, you go back to the top and tell them that this is one sure way of getting trouble.
They told us how to answer that one, too.
I did my best. My best to break every one of the Marquess of Queensbury rules. I knew I was fighting a losing fight, but I was fighting for a little time, and that's all I got. If this never stops, and my head began to feel like a ping-pong ball in a four-handed game. Suddenly, things looked up. Me, flat on my back in the snow, seeing stars. And then a boot came flying toward my head and switched off all the little pretty lights.
All America's taken to Sing It Again, CBS Saturday night show of fun, frolic, and the fabulous Phantom Fortune. By telephone, listeners all over the nation are asked for their answers to the rhythmic riddle song. Popular songs with new lyrics hiding the name of a movie star, radio star, or man about town. A right answer to a riddle, and the listener gets a crack at Sing It Again's Phantom Voice Fortune of $24,500 in prizes. It's a sensational session of music, suspense, and prizes. Don't miss Sing It Again tonight over most of these same CBS network stations. Maybe you'll sing to the tune of 24-5. And now back to yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account, item 5, medical supplies, bonded, $7. And here's something I'll give you for free. A handy help for your regularly employed insurance investigators. When I find myself overwhelmed in a brawl with unknown assailants, cops included, I do my best to take away more than just bruises and contusions. During my career, I've picked more pockets than a rack boy in a pool room. And I added one more to the score during the brawl in front of the Parakoff house, just before I went bye-bye in the snow.
Hey. Hey, mister, wake up. Come on, wake up. You'll catch your death of cold.
Oh.
You call a cab?
Yeah, I think so.
Holy smokes, your face. Was you robbed?
What's the matter, is Miss Fair?
Huh? Oh, here, come on. I'll give you a hand.
Thanks.
Holy smoke. When I first seen you laying there, I thought you was a snowman tipped over. How do you feel, cold?
Forevermore, I shall look kindly upon the haddock in the deep freeze.
Huh?
Hey, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for a wallet.
You lose it?
First I found it, and then I lost it. Oh, here it is. Come on, let's get out of here.
Where to, Mr. Police Headquarters?
Oh, no. Over my dead body. Expense account item 6, breakfast and bed, $2.40. Expense account item 7, photographic work, $6, for taking pictures of contents of wallet I lifted from the police uniform the night before, which I sent to you, dear East Coast underwriter, for safekeeping. Expense account item 8, 70 cents cab fare to office of Edmund Byron, district attorney. Item 9, tip the driver, $1.
Sorry to have kept you waiting, Dollar. Good heavens, man. What happened to your face? Dullness assault?
Yeah, but I got a flash for you. Not by person or persons unknown.
Splendid. You wish to prefer charges?
Half right again, but not for felonious assault, and not against the guys who gave me that going over last night.
And what are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about. They were two of your harness bulls. But I don't want to waste time listening to you deny it, so forget it.
I don't have the slightest idea what this is all about, Dollar.
I said forget it. I want to talk about something more important. You're holding Harlan Wolf for the Parakoff murder. Now, what I want to know is, when are you going to hand down your indictment and what it's going to be?
First thing in the morning, first-degree murder. Anything else that you want to know before I have you thrown out of here?
Yeah. How do I get mixed up in these rhubarbs? Expense account, item 10, 5 cents. Phone call to my partner in despair, attorney for the defense, Eric Barker, who agreed to lend me a set of police photographs of the scene of the crime. They arrived at my hotel room just as I was leaving it to eat. And when I looked at them, I lost my appetite. According to the X's marking the various spots, Parakoff and Wolf had been standing face to face in the middle of the room when Wolf decided to punch Parakoff's ticket with a few .38 caliber perforation. According to the photographs of the corpus delicti, all of the steel-jacketed forget-me-nots had gone banging straight into the right side of Parakoff's body. I set up an appointment to meet Barker at 3 that afternoon and decided to make the most of the time in between by seeing what kind of a trade I could make on that wallet I picked up during the winter sports of the night before. The name in it was Ben Arnold, and the address was disreputable.
I don't want any brushes.
Well, what a coincidence. I'm not selling any.
What do you want?
I'm looking for Ben Arnold.
Who isn't? He promised me he'd be home by now. By this time, I should know better.
Well, I'll wait.
Outside.
Inside.
Hey, wait a minute. Ben won't like this.
Well, that makes it even. I don't like Ben.
Look, I don't want any trouble.
Okay, don't make any trouble.
What do you want here anyway?
Well, let's just say I dropped in for an unfriendly visit.
If Ben finds you here, it'll get real unfriendly. Ain't that face of yours marked up enough?
Well, that mouse hanging under your eye isn't exactly a beauty mark. Ben really spreads his blessings, doesn't he? Ben had really spread one blessing right there close in front of me. It was a small room, about the size of a large closet, with the clothes sprawled high and low, making the whole place look like a collapsed clothesline. And there, hanging on the back of the door, was Ben Arnold's police uniform. My eyes popped out, pushed one of its shiny brass buttons, and rang the bell. There, like little love letters on the brass, stood the initials CPD. And CPD were never the initials of the Benton Police Department. Thanks for seeing me so quickly, Barker.
Oh, Dolly, you're up. Good Lord. What happened to your face?
A couple of police uniforms with overstuffed shoulders did this to me last night.
Yeah, there you are. I warned you that we're up against a bunch of ruthless people. Something should be done about it. Using the police force to beat up anybody who stands in their way.
No, Barker. They were wearing uniforms, but they weren't police.
I'm afraid I don't follow you.
Barker, can you give me one good reason for a Benton cop to be wearing an out-of-town uniform? And don't tell me they got mixed up at the cleaners.
Out-of-town uniform?
Yes, and here's another one. If the law enforcement setup here is so rotten, why would they go to all the trouble of dressing up an outsider to do their muscle work?
I don't know.
What I mean is, did they?
Why? Who else would do it? It certainly couldn't have been Marcia.
Why not? She isn't exactly hard up for a motive. If Wolf goes to the chair, she collects his insurance money. Not only is she the widow of the original beneficiary, she's also vice president of a coal company. Any way you look at it, she's a secondary beneficiary.
But why should Wolf admit to the shooting? He has nothing to gain and his life to lose.
Look, Marcia told me that the night of the murder, she and Wolf were alone in the house talking about the coal business. Then she didn't know what I meant when I used the words bituminous and anthracite. Whatever they had on the fire that night, it wasn't coal.
You're right about that. Marcia and Wolf were having, well, some kind of a romance.
Yeah, okay. So let's say Marcia shot her husband. Let's say Wolf is madly in love with her. Let's say She promises Wolf that she will testify he shot her husband in self-defense. Marcia gets away with murder. Wolf gets away with a light sentence or none at all. And then Wolf gets away with a girl. Now, that does make sense.
What makes you think this is even possible?
Parker, somebody had me beat up last night. I say the prosecution wouldn't have bothered sending fake cops. There's one thing I got to check, and check fast.
What's that?
Those police photos you gave me show that Parakoff was shot by a left-handed shooter.
Well, that's one of the prosecution's strongest points. Wolf is left-handed.
That doesn't prove that Marcia isn't. Parker, I'm going to go out and see Mrs. Parakoff. And there's only really one thing I hope.
That she's left-handed?
Uh-uh. That she's wearing that same negligee that she had on last night. Hello, Marcia. Can I come in?
Why, Johnny, what happened to your face?
I didn't get down to the beauty parlor today.
Oh, you look like you've been fighting.
Mm-hmm. Not too well, but wisely.
Well, come on in the other room. And how about throwing another log on the fire?
You're a real little firebug, aren't you? You should have lived back in old Nero's time.
Whose time?
Nero's time. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll build the fire if you light it.
I'd love to. Oh, you're getting a dry one from inside. Last night, you went all the way outside to get one that would burn for a long time.
Hey, you got some paper?
Yeah, here's some.
Well, there we are. Okay, hot point. Here's my lighter. Touch it off.
Okay. Here, that'll do it. Come on, sit down.
There's one more thing I'd like you to do for me.
What is it?
Very simple. Pick up your phone and call the district attorney. Tell him you want to change your story on the murder of your husband.
What are you talking about?
If you don't, I will.
Well, what have I done?
Okay, if you want to play games, I'll read you the rules. You know, there's a big advantage to being on my side of investigation. See, fellows in my racket have the benefit of a lot of experience. But murderers, well, almost everyone is inexperienced at that business. One moment they aren't murderers, the next moment they are.
Oh, Johnny, please.
But now let's take a look at what's on my side. For instance, for one thing, from the empty shells thrown off by an automatic pistol, the experts can get a better picture of a murder scene than they can from the witnesses. Your husband was killed by a gun that was held approximately 18 inches away and directly in front of him, and the bullets entered the right half of his body. That means he was killed by a left-handed shooter.
Harlan Wolf is left-handed. You can ask him. He'll tell you.
I know that.
And I'm right-handed.
I just found that out, too.
And what more do you need?
Not much. Now, Marcia, let's see what you've got going for you. You've got a face and a body, and not too much of a brain. But, baby, that's not enough. It's not enough to offset the things that I know.
You don't know anything.
Oh, okay. So let's make this a guessing game. Let's guess, after your husband was shot, you called Wolf. When he got here, you told him you'd given your husband a .38 caliber divorce, right? Then you charmed him into taking the rap for you, right?
No.
And then you told him you'd testify he shot your husband in self-defense, right? Then once you got him in jail, you told the district attorney that Wolf had committed premeditated murder, that he'd been after you to leave your husband and had threatened to shoot him if you didn't, right?
Stop it!
That's a good idea, Dollar. Stop it.
Eric, he knows. What are we going to do?
Keep quiet.
We'll have to get rid of him, Eric.
Just as soon as we get rid of something else.
All right, Dollar. I want Ben Arnold's wallet, and I want it right now.
You're welcome to it, Barker. But it might interest you to know that I had its picture taken this morning. Your phony policeman's wallet and everything in it. And copies of the photos are in the mail right now. The insurance company won't have any trouble connecting you with the comedy cops who beat me up last night.
Yeah, you're bluffing.
But that's not all I've got on you, Barker. This morning when I was lying in bed, reading bumps on my head, it suddenly dawned on me that you were the only one that knew where I was going last night. So you must have been the one who had me roughed up. It also does my heart good to see you standing there holding that gun in your left hand. You shot Parkoff and then got out of here while Marcia called Wolf, told him she'd done it, and talked him into taking the rap.
Shoot him. Shoot him, Eric.
For a lawyer, Barker, how do you like my case? Good, isn't it?
What are you waiting for? What? Shoot him. Kill him, I tell you.
Shut up, Marcia. All right, Dollar. Stand still.
If you want, I will. Give me that gun.
Marcia, look out!
Marcia made a rush to grab the gun from Barker. She got between me and the gun, and I dove in behind her. Arms straight out,
ow!
Picked her up, and she...
Ow!
Marcia went smashing into Barker, and I went on a frantic treasure hunt through that flailing mass of snorting, angry bodies to find the hand that held the gun.
Believe me, it was no place for a lady, but Marcia was no lady. I grabbed deep in between them and yanked Barker's gun hand up out of the go-round, and just to make sure the rest was strictly a fist fight, jammed my trigger finger in the ceiling. The way the plaster was falling, it was like another fight in the snow. But this time, Johnny Della came up heads instead of tails. Come on, Barker, up. Come on, get up.
No, no.
Down you go.
Eric.
All right, Marcia. Now be a nice little girl. Pick up the nice little telephone and call the nice little district attorney and invite him out to your nice little house. Expense account, item 11. $12.40. That was lunch for district attorney, during which we agreed that it was the first case we'd ever worked on where the defense was working harder for a conviction than the prosecution. Also, that it was the first case where everybody turned out to be guilty. Defense attorney Eric Barker of murder, his girlfriend Martha Tarakoff of being an accessory before and after the fact, and Harlan Wolf of conspiracy to defraud. Oh, no wonder the nation's jails are getting overcrowded. Expense account, item 12. Hotel bill, $28. Expense account, item 13. Flowers for the cell of unlucky Marcia Tarakoff, $5. Expense account, item 14. $700. Side trip to Miami, Florida. Purpose? To recover from catching 40 winks and miserable cold in Benton, Ohio snowbank. Expense account total, $1,230.20. Signed, yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Listen in again next week when CBS brings you Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, with Charles Russell as Johnny. Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar is written by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd and is produced and directed by Richard Sandville. Live life with Luigi, and you live a wonderful life of seeing yourself as others see you. Luigi Basco is the little Italian immigrant who loves America, even though he's highly puzzled by American ways, American language, Americans themselves. His friends try to explain, his neighbors try to help, but it's usually Luigi who has the last word, who knows what America really is. Luigi's life is paved with laughter, and yours will be too, for the half hour that Life with Luigi fills every Sunday night over most of these CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Thanks for downloading this week's podcast of the Radio Detective Story Hour. If you'd like to make any comments, you can go to the website at detective.libsyn.com, or you can just send an email to me at otrpodcast@gmail.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. That's Pear.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.